98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, welcome back, my friend. Glad to see that you were not eaten by a grizzly bear while you spent a week in Montana. Although you did see two of them.
I saw two of them from a distance at the St. Mary's Lake there inside Glacier. We saw them from a distance. Man, the cars were piled on the road. Everybody was standing in the bed of their trucks looking at the two bears down there by the lakeside. I was telling stories to the guys when we were together for the first time since I'd been gone about the things you do to protect yourself from bears when you're hiking around Montana, and you guys were all just fascinated by
bear spray. What if you miss?
You shoot at their feet. You've only got about 7 seconds of juice in the can,
well,
and then you're going to run out.
I didn't know this, because I would think, like, I see a bear, and he starts coming towards me, I'm going to run.
Yeah.
But those little suckers run 35 miles an hour.
35 miles an hour. They're going to get you.
They're going to get you.
They want you. They're going to get you.
One way or another, they're going to get you. They're going to get you. They're going to get you. They run 35 miles an hour.
You just have to make sure that you run faster than anyone else that you're with.
That's right. All you have to do is run.
That's true.
Just outrun your rest of your group.
You just have to run faster than Chelsea.
What if you're with your wife?
You just have to run faster than your wife.
Do you take it on the chin and let the bear get you so she can escape? Or do you just say, you know what? I'll find another wife.
That's a really good question for your marital counselor. To kind of determine what your values are in life, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you take one for the Gambadoro family team and you just kind of slow up and say,
how much do you love your significant other?
Honey, tell everyone I said goodbye.
Would you get mauled by a grizzly bear to save the life of your significant other? Mitch, that could be a poll question.
That's a horrible poll question. Horrible poll question. Please don't put that out there.
I was going to say, I don't think I condone that as a poll question today.
That's just a little too violent for us. So yeah, didn't get eaten by a bear. Saw a couple.
What happened while you were gone, by the way?
Yeah. Just total deadpan here. So what'd I miss? What's going on around here anyway?
Well, Bickley Murata now in the morning.
I'm driving in and I'm like, the Wolf and Luke show? Yeah. I see
Well, you had
on
no
my...
Wi-Fi for the last 10 days. You were in the middle of nowhere. You didn't have Wi-Fi.
It's a true story. I actually didn't have Wi-Fi for a couple of days.
Bernsie came back and he's like, what? There's a new lineup?
It's kind of like, have you heard these stories of someone who like went on vacation right as the pandemic was beginning? Like some desolate island and they were there for like months. And then they came back home or couldn't get back home, and they're like, "What's going on?"
No, I knew what was going on. The announcements were made the day before we left for Montana, but man, I got more than enough messages from people like, "You're okay, right? I mean, you're not like answering, you're not responding to any of my text messages, or are you okay? Is everything? Okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just up in Montana. I don't get great Wi-Fi up in Montana.
Yeah,
it's all good.
The only non-change is that we're still doing afternoon drive.
Hey,
that's it.
We're here. Yeah. We're here. We're dug in like a tick here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. So let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
And back from Montana just in time for game week for the Arizona Cardinals. Away
let's
we go.
Go.
17 weeks of big-time question marks, big-time drama. Cliff. Steve, Kyler, I mean, just a DeAndre, JJ, go right on down the list.
The Steve Keim show will be on our show starting on Friday.
Indeed.
We'll have the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, Steve Keim, on the show.
Indeed it will. We're going to talk about the Titans here in a minute. First, let's run through a couple of things that have kind of come down with the Arizona Cardinals as they announce their first official depth chart. Now, it's just a piece of paper. It doesn't mean that much until they actually start playing some games. But before we start talking about the Titans, let's take a look at this bad boy real quick and tear it apart
Something
here for a moment.
Something sticks out that we talked about before you went on vacation.
I was here. Yeah, I was here
you
for
were
the
here
conversation.
When I broke out the news that Josh Jones would end up being the starting right guard for the Arizona Cardinals. I think a lot of people were baffled by that when I brought that up a couple of weeks ago. And the depth chart has come out, and Josh Jones is listed as the starter.
Yeah, it looks that way. Josh has come a long way in a short time. Didn't get a lot of action last year. Had him more as a tackle, and this year is transitioning to that guard position and really handled himself well. He'll continue to, you know, have his ups and downs as young players do, but we like what we've seen so far.
That was Cliff Kingsbury with the Wolf and Luke Show, and yeah, that's going to take some getting used to, but we'll all work on it together. The Wolf and Luke Show. Josh Jones is listed on the depth chart as the starting right guard. That was something you had mentioned before.
Yeah,
I left
August
for sure.
26th, I tweeted it out that don't be surprised if Josh Jones has had a great camp. He's going to win the job outright. So we put that out there on August 26th. It looks like Josh Jones is going to be the guy.
Rashard Lawrence is listed as the starting nose tackle. Corey Peters is the backup. Again, I imagine that's going to be very rotational, keep guys fresh, that sort of thing. I was of all the things to not talk about when I was gone on vacation, I was very disappointed to not be on the air for the whole Malcolm Butler retired thing.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Okay, I saw that headline pop up on the Arizona Sports app when I was gone. I'm like, really?
Wait, I thought you had no Wi-Fi.
Well, it came and went. It came and went.
Malcolm Butler retired.
Yeah, Malcolm Butler retired. Byron Murphy and Robert Alford is listed as your starting cornerbacks. Christian Kirk is listed as your punt returner. Eno Benjamin or Rondale Moore listed as the kickoff return. But obviously the big one there is Josh Jones as the starting right guard.
Yeah, and then we had said Eno would be the number three, and I didn't see the depth chart. Was Eno number three?
No, Jonathan Ward was number the number three running back on that list.
I'll be interested to see if they switch that up. Lawrence and Peters will definitely rotate, and we'll see if Eno ends up, you know, rotating as well with Ward, but they were very happy with Eno. But yeah, the big one is Josh Jones. I mean, listen, he drafted that kid and they really liked him, and he's got his feet wet now and he's got some experience. He's just mauling people, and I'm really excited about their offensive line.
Yeah, I'm excited that Josh Jones is going to get a chance to show himself, and like you had said, that was something you had mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Now, the Titans themselves, that they come into this season and they're a funky team to try to figure out, in the sense that there are expectations of the Tennessee Titans. They're considered that this is obviously week one opponent for the Cardinals now. They're coming in with a lot of expectations, a lot of belief that offensively, and you can see why, with Julio Jones, with A.J. Brown, with Derrick Henry, with Ryan Tannehill, with a great offensive line, that they could put up some points in a hurry on some teams. They've got expectations to win their division. There's not a lot of expectations of them winning the Super Bowl. The weirdest thing about them
with Kansas City, I mean, like, everybody's picking Kansas City to get to win it,
except for Larry Fitzgerald.
Fitz has Tennessee in it.
Fitz has Tennessee losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. On his radio show yesterday, he mentioned that he thought Tennessee was going to win the AFC. But you're right, when you've got a behemoth like Kansas City, it's hard not to pick Kansas City. It's hard not to look at the Chiefs and go, yeah, they're, if I got to pick one team, that's the team I'm going to pick.
Right.
The weird thing about the Titans is going to be the chemistry issue with Julio Jones and Ryan Tannehill. Those two guys, for one reason or another, have not spent a lot of time getting used to each other at all going into this season.
Yeah, I think that they'll get the chemistry there, right? I think that it'll work out. But I think if you're looking for an advantage for the Cardinals, I think that could be your advantage, that they have not played a lot together, Julio Jones. Now, you look at this team, and you know, you see a team that runs the ball as well as anybody with Derrick Henry. I mean, he's a beast. And just, you know, 1,000 yards easy for him every year. Man, and just a touchdown machine. I mean, he's just a touchdown. I think he's got 47 touchdowns since he's been there. So hard to keep that guy out of the end zone. He's just so good. 47 touchdowns. He's been over 1,000 yards in each of Mike Vrabel's 3 years in charge. 47 touchdowns. And you had Julio Jones. But, you know, because of, like, COVID and things like that, they just have not been on the field a whole lot together. You know, Tannehill and Julio Jones. So that could be an advantage for the Cardinals, that they have not been able to work together to gain any chemistry.
It's almost like there are some teams, and I'd have to think about who else around the league I would classify as a team like this, that you're going to want to play them early and not late. And I think Tennessee is one of those classic, you're going to want to get them early, not late teams. Because in the beginning of the season, they're going to take some time to work through their lack of familiarity with each other, especially when it comes to a huge piece like Julio Jones. One thing is clear from the Wolf and Luke show when Cliff Kingsbury was on with them: you're going to have to score some points on offense to keep up with Tennessee.
They're just a team that possesses the football. And so if you don't score points, you're going to look up, you're going to have limited possessions, and the game's going to be over and they will have won. So I think more than anything, it's maximizing our possessions and just finding a way to win at the end. Tennessee's a very disciplined football team. You know, Coach Vrabel does a tremendous job with situational football, and they like to limit your possessions. So I think the most important thing for our offense is to stay on schedule and then maximize those possessions when we get our chances.
They're not a good defensive team. I mean, you talk about their offense and the talent they have with Brown and with Julio and with Ryan Tannehill's 2 years removed from Miami. It's their defense that was terrible. Now, they tried to address it, right? They added, you know, Dupree. They were like third to last in sacks. Their defense last year, 28th overall, 29th against the pass, 19th against the rush, 24th scoring. So they will give up a lot of points. They will give up points. But they control the game with their running. They control, if they are able to control the game running, you know, and have those long drives, they can wear you out, and that's how they win a lot of football games.
Yeah, the Julio Jones, and here's Cliff Kingsbury talking about that Tennessee defense.
Physical. I think that's the thing that jumps out first and foremost. You know, up front, had some big additions in Autry and Bud Dupree. Simmons is an emerging player. He's one of the elite talents in the league. Physical linebackers that really take on blocks and shed them well. And then those safeties come up and get involved in the run game. And so they're well coached and play hard, you know, each and every snap.
You know, I think this is a tough first week matchup for the Arizona Cardinals, but I'd much rather play the Titans in week one than I would in week 10.
Yeah, I think the big matchup is really, you know, Hopkins and Janoris Jenkins. I mean, Janoris has a lot of experience playing elite wide receivers, but he's declining athletically. He's not a big guy. He's only 5'10". Father Time's catching up with him. You know, that's a matchup you look and you say, I can exploit that matchup. If it's Jenkins on Hopkins, you really, really like that. You do. I think that's where they're going to struggle a little bit in the secondary. I think that's where Tennessee's going to struggle. So I like Arizona's ability to, you know, to really take advantage of the wide receiver matchups they have.
So the Arizona Cardinals home opener, it's next Sunday, the home opener. We're giving you the chance to be there for the return of the Red Sea. Text Red Sea right now, one word, REDSEA, to 620-620. Listen for your name starting next Monday at 7:35, 1:35, and 3:35. And you could win a pair of tickets to the home opener, plus one grand prize winner will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey courtesy of Pristine Auction. Again, that's Red Sea, one word, to 620-620. In the first full week of Pac-12 action, there was one big, huge positive for the conference, but was it overshadowed by how bad it was for everybody else in the Pac-12? That's coming up next, the Burns and Gambo Show. Burns and Gambo here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, after my Montana vacation. I'm back just in time for the start of football season, pro football, on Thursday when the defending world champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers take the field. But then college football from this past weekend.
I watched more college football this weekend than I think I did on any other Saturday ever. I mean,
and you have a huge advantage over me on this one, because I'm going to tell you right now, we were traveling all day on Saturday. So I was getting scores and whatnot.
Man,
so
I you know what I did? I mean, I taped a lot of games, and I went, like, U of A, I watched Sunday. The U of A BYU game, I watched Sunday. But I watched the Penn State-Wisconsin game. I watched Alabama-Miami. I watched UCLA-LSU. I watched, you know, before that I had watched the Ohio State-Minnesota game. I watched so many. And you know me, I have to watch one game at a time. I don't go channel surfing and back and forth. So, literally, like, six games recorded. I'd watch one, then watch another. Saturday was just a day I basically just sat around and watched a lot of college football. Yep. I taped some games. I came back Sunday and I watched a few more. But the biggest shocker, I mean, the biggest win for the Pac-12 in a long, long time was UCLA getting that win over LSU.
Yeah.
It was a huge win for the
conference. Saw the highlights from it. And I'm going to just be 100% honest with everybody. I did not watch the game and we were traveling all day long, but I saw the highlights and I read all the stories about it. It sounds like UCLA physically at the point of attack manhandled LSU in that game. Absolutely manhandled LSU.
Yeah, there's no question about it that they won the line of scrimmage. And they just, you know, that's the biggest win, they're saying, in the Pac-12 since Oregon beat Florida State in the 2014 season. The biggest win. Because they usually lose these games.
Yes.
But I'll tell you, I'm not a real fan of Dorian Thompson-Robinson, but he was good in this game. He only completed 9 passes, but they were big passes, 260 yards and 3 touchdowns. So they set up a lot of big plays, man. At 470 yards, that Zach Charbonneau kid had a great game running the football. Kyle Phillips, the wide receiver, he was outstanding. Britton Brown, I mean, I like that team. And I look at their schedule, and you tell me where the loss is. Ready? Here's UCLA. Fresno State?
No.
Stanford?
No.
ASU at home?
Maybe.
Arizona?
No.
The Washington team that just got beat by Montana?
We'll talk about that in a second. No.
Oregon?
Maybe. Utah?
Utah.
I've got the schedule here in front of me. Utah?
Utah?
Maybe.
USC?
Maybe. Yeah, there's some maybes in there. I mean, it's
where is the loss for UCLA? Where?
I just said maybe on like 3
I know
of
said
them.
Maybe like 3. I'm just thinking to myself.
Well, and also
like,
based
where
off
is the loss?
Based off of the history of this conference, what are the chances the
nobody
conference
goes
cannibalizes
undefeated.
Itself?
That's exactly, nobody goes undefeated.
Nobody goes undefeated in this conference. They just and that's why I'm saying maybe. And I'm sorry, that's a lame answer, but it's the right answer. Maybe. I mean, in this conference, cannibalization is exactly the word. Jordan is 100% right. Man, this conference, they just eat each other up. Now, okay, I'll tell you, you've got a teammate on this one, and that's Kirk Herbstreit, who on SportsCenter last night said if UCLA gets past Fresno, they could go on a run.
Fresno State to me is a little tricky. You know, even though you would think it shouldn't be, it will be, because now they're getting pats on the back, and now you're going to test as far as the maturity level of their team, and that's what Chip's going to be working towards, is them handling success. If they handle the success, then I don't think there's any problem thinking that. I started to look at their schedule. They get a real shot to make a run. You know, they got a real shot to possibly, I don't have the schedule memorized, but I think if they get by Fresno State, they got a shot to get to the Pac-12 championship.
Wow.
Yeah. The best play of the game was that tight end. He looks like a mountain. Dulcich. I mean, he had this 75-yard touchdown run where he made the cornerback miss, then he got tackled, but he's so big, he got tackled into the end zone. That play was unreal. You know, then they put the game away. Kyle Phillips, like, broke 2 tackles on a 45-yard touchdown pass, but left 2 guys in the dust.
Yeah.
And they put that game, a big win for UCLA.
Big win for UCLA. Our buddy John Wilner, who covers the Pac-12 for the San Jose Mercury News, you'll hear his voice from time to time on our show. We love talking to him. Ran a poll on Twitter over the weekend, and you'll see where I'm going with this in just a second here. Was the weekend, a success because of UCLA's win? This is for the whole conference now.
Okay.
Was it a success because of UCLA's win? Was it a tie because UCLA's win and the losses cancel each other out?
Tie.
Or was it a failure because the losses trump UCLA's win?
It could have been so much better. I mean, the most shocking loss in all of college football this week, I don't know if Jordan, you agree with me?
Montana
Washington.
Washington. Oh, it has to be.
I mean, they paid him $700,000 to go get their – they paid him $700,000.
It's only the 5th time in the history of the sport that a ranked top 25 team has lost to an FCS team.
Yeah. Fifth time since 70. The Grizzlies were 117-1 against the Huskies. The only other win they had was in 1920. 1920. And Montana – I mean, the last time they played each other was in 2017. You know what the final score was? Washington won 63-7.
That's usually what happens when ranked FBS teams tank on FCS teams.
You pay him $700,000 and they beat you.
Yeah.
It's the most stunning upset in college football the opening weekend. Washington, ranked number 20, loses to an FCS team. That was a shocker. But I think it's a tie because I think the UCLA win was a win that the conference really needed. But, man, the Pac-12 North.
Yeah.
Pac-12 North.
I wasn't here for it. I know you guys talked a lot about it on Friday. I know there was a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of concern over ASU and how they looked over Southern Utah.
Yeah.
I got to imagine ASU fan feels a little bit better today, right?
Yeah, Oregon barely beat Fresno. Oregon State lost to Purdue. Cal got beat by Nevada.
Yep.
Stanford lost to K-State. Washington got beat by – and Washington State. Washington State lost to Utah State. Like, oh, man, it was the Aggies. That Washington State quarterback was the worst quarterback I saw this week. Did you see any of that game, Jordan? Any of it?
Yeah, I was watching quite a bit of it.
Is that not the worst quarterback you saw? That guy was absolutely Jaden DeLora. My God, was he terrible.
He was rough.
I can't believe that's a college quarterback. He was so bad.
Well, I don't know why they don't run the ball more with that little scat back that they have. He was the only one keeping him in that game. Borgie or something like that?
Bonner?
For the record, I'll tell you the results of the poll. 56% of his voters called the weekend a failure. Said that the losses trumped UCLA's win.
I could say it.
28% said it was a tie. Only 16% of the people who voted on his poll said UCLA beating LSU meant it was a positive over the weekend and not a negative.
I mean, Utah State was 1-5 last year. They lost every game by at least 19 points. They fired their coach midseason, and then they come in and it's their and they beat Washington State. Like how did that happen?
It could be worse. Every single ranked team in the ACC lost over the weekend. Clemson. Oh, and we'll talk more about this in a little bit.
Clemson. North Carolina.
They've got and Miami.
Miami.
They've no wiggle room now for Clemson. They can't lose another game. They can't lose one more game from here on out. If they want to get there, they can't lose one more game the rest of the way.
We'll talk about it later, but their quarterback wasn't very good. How do you say his last name? Ugalele?
No, it's not how you say
not
his
ukulele.
Name. It's not ukulele. It's I'll be honest with you. I meant to look it up because I forgot how
Mitch,
to say
Mitch, how
his
do you
name.
Say his name? Ugalele?
Agunga.
You can't say it either.
Don't ask me. Never
okay.
Yeah, right?
Listen,
I need
I don't
to practice
know if it was
it.
His fault or that they had no wide receivers, no running game, and no offensive line.
Offensive line was terrible.
He looked terrible.
Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast?
Yes.
Subscribe right now. I'm sure you have. Subscribe right now because you love the sound of your voice. Subscribe on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show.
Go back to Montana.
The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. I mean, look, Mitch is not quite warmed up to giving you the grief that Sarah usually does, so someone's got to carry that baton, and I've decided it's going to be me.
I thought I was going to go a griefless day.
Oh, God, no.
I deserve a griefless day.
Yeah, you really don't, actually. You've done nothing to deserve a griefless day. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Arizona Diamondbacks, rough weekend getting swept by the Seattle Mariners. Their manager, Troy Lovello, joins us here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Your exclusive home of the D-backs.
Diamondbacks.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. D-backs manager Torrey Lovello joins Burns and Gambo to talk D-backs baseball. Presented by PNC Bank. Financial tools and tech to help make things easier.
Our weekly visit with the manager of the Diamondbacks, Torrey Lovello. He joins us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line as the Diamondbacks get ready to take on the Texas Rangers tonight. Hi, Torrey. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Good, Skip. I want to talk about the festivities, you know, celebrating the team that won the championship. Your last year as a player in Major League Baseball was, I think, 1999 with the Phillies, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Now, I don't know if you played against that Diamondback team that year won 100 baseball games. There was no Curt Schilling, but it was Randy and Gonzo, and it was Jay Bell and Matt Williams and Steve Finley, and I just want to... You know, and Randy was there, of course. I just want to see if you have any recollection of thinking that team was on the verge of something special when you were a player.
You know, what's funny is, yes, I was with the Phillies. I do remember coming in here, and, of course, I get my only start in the series against Randy Johnson. and, you know, thank you, Tito. But I do remember having the bases loaded and no outs, and he was in a real bind. It was late, maybe like the sixth or the seventh inning, and I hit a line drive one-hopper right to the second baseman, who in turn turned a double play and got Randy off the hook. So I was being an Arizona team player before I was in Arizona.
I had never heard. Have you told that story before?
I've never told that story, but I remember if you had a chance, like if the exit velocity was up there, it definitely would have been over 100 miles an hour. I squared it up, and it was one shot. You know, I knew the unit would throw the first pitch fastball, whatever I was sitting on, and it showed up. And when you faced the unit, you were just trying to make contact. That's how good he was. With most guys, you're trying to square up the baseball and do damage. With him, it was a totally different story. That's how good he was. But I guessed right. It was there. And you know what? I hit it right to the second baseman.
Okay.
So
that's
all I remember.
It's a better story than striking out. Take your manager's cap away. At the time, what was better? Would you have been better off striking out against Randy Johnson or hitting a double play in which you could say you hit a freaking bullet right to the second baseman? Which was better?
Yeah, no, I love the fact that I hit it as hard as I did. And I think the game was a two-run game. And my mindset was, he's going to throw this pitch. I'm tying up this baseball game. Obviously, I fell very, very short of that goal.
Oh, and look, you hit it hard, man.
You hit it hard.
You
hit it hard, Skip. Yeah. Put it in play. You got to put it in play to make something happen. So did you believe that they were on the verge of something special that year that you were with the Phillies?
I did. You know what? The house was packed. It was a new organization, a new franchise that was extremely well run, and you just felt the energy inside of the stadium. And yeah, you know, any team that had the big unit on it, any team that had Gonzo on it, I remember Jay Bell and perhaps Mark Grace being on that team as well. Just the number of guys that they had, you knew that they had a good nucleus of talented players that were still playing at a very elite level. And I just remember this structure was enormous, and the fans brought the energy, and that's something that I remember personally. So I know that the fans are out there, and we wanted to do something special just like that team did. And it was a good time for this organization, and obviously 2 years later they win the World Championship. Nothing got better.
Yeah, I know. Fast forward to present day Arizona Diamondbacks baseball. A rough weekend, especially with the bullpen. Is that getting harder and harder to kind of figure it out, especially now with the moves that you made there? Tyler Clippard is hurt, and now Taylor Clark gets moved. Is it getting harder and harder to kind of figure out what combination of guys you want to use in those late-inning situations, Skip?
Yeah, it is. It's very challenging when, you know, some players that you've counted on in the past are either banged up and placed on the IL, or you know, players aren't getting the job done and you send them down, it gets a little bit challenging. But we have some good candidates that we know have been throwing the ball very well on the back end. We'll just, you know, bump up their roles most likely. We haven't yet quite figured that out. But that's my job. My job is to evaluate, make sure that the guys are doing their jobs, and when they have a new opportunity presented in front of them, that they're ready for that opportunity. And then the ones that are going to be getting a whole completely different opportunity and they're going to get that chance to pitch at the back end of a game, I want to see what they could do, and they're going to know it's their opportunity to go out and do their job. And anytime you have young players that are getting their first chance at getting into that new role, I'm excited about that, and I'm going to share in those good moments with them. And we're going to keep teaching them, and that's all we can do is we keep moving forward day by day.
Is the bullpen too young? Do you feel like, and I know this wasn't the plan in the beginning, right? You had Devenski, you had Clippard, you had Soria. It wasn't the plan initially, but do you feel like the philosophy needs to change, that maybe more money should be invested on bullpen guys and you may need more veteran guys that have been through the battles?
Man, you're asking some really, really good questions. And, you know, I go back and forth with what the needs are and what things, what, you know, where areas need to be tightened up. And look, it's from top to bottom, as far as I'm concerned, it starts with me and it ends with the last player on the roster. So we have to do some really, really good self-evaluation and overall evaluation about what's needed as we continue to move this ship forward. And, you know, when you're getting into what's happening in the bullpen, yes, of course you want to have guys that have experience and have sat in that chair before, where they've got to close out a game or come into the middle of a log jam in the eighth inning and slow their heartbeat down. But we've battle tested guys this year, and winning a baseball game, no matter what your record is going to be a chance for us to evaluate where you are and who you are and how you're going to fit into this big puzzle that we're creating. And we have a lot of good young arms down there that are getting that experience right now, and we're trying to rip that Band-Aid off of some new guys and new situations, and we want to be that much closer in 2022. We feel like we have some really good key pieces. It's up to us to find out who they are and how they function best inside of that bullpen.
Last year, Madison Bumgarner had 9 starts. He threw a total of 41 innings. This year, he's got 22 starts, and he's thrown a total of 123 innings. The last 2 starts for him have been somewhat of a struggle. He had 100 pitches against Philadelphia, gave up 5 runs. He walked 4 in that game. He walked 5 against Seattle, threw 94 pitches. So I'm going to ask you, do you anticipate at any point either lessening the load of Madison Bumgarner to keep him healthy for next year, or maybe shutting him down completely?
We haven't had those discussions at all. We have brought up his name for you know, clipping him short. He's a big body. He's a horse. He's done it before. It's that young pitcher that has never done it before or has been coming off of, and I know Bum is injured, was injured last year and injured this year, but, you know, a young pitcher with limited experience of getting to 200 innings is coming off an injury, or, you know, has that 140 inning increase. Those are the hot spots for us. With Bum, we feel like his body and his experience and just the overall power that his entire body puts out is going to give him the ability to compete and compete at a high level for the rest of this year. So no, we have not had those discussions, but we will have discussions about other guys. And if Bum needs to enter into that discussion, we will. We'll pay close attention to him. We do a very good job of that. We have a team full of people that are watching every move that these pitchers make, and they give me the information, they dummy it down for me, and then we can make the right decision moving forward.
Thanks for the conversation, Skip. As always, we appreciate it. Good luck tonight. We will talk to you next week.
Okay, boys. Talk to you soon.
Got it. Troy Lovello joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. The NFL season kicks off this Thursday night. There is still time for you to sign up for Bix Picks. Text the word pick to 62620. Sign up and compete against Dan Bickley for your chance at the grand prize of a tailgate package featuring a Yeti Tundra cooler and grill courtesy of Modelo Especial. Weekly winners will also receive a $100 gift card to Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers. Again, text the word pick to 62620 to enter. When we come back, many thought the Cardinals should have drafted him in the first round this past season. But in the end, did the Cardinals get the rookie cornerback decision right? We'll explain by taking a look at the Titans next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
D-back skipper Torrey Lovello joins Burns and Gambo Tuesday afternoons at 2:30. Presented by PNC Bank. Financial tools and tech to help make things easier. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll. Presented by Sanderson Ford.
Right, so Mitch is here with us with today's Twitter poll question.
Mitch is here and Burnsy's here too.
I know, right? It's...
You know, did you know that Mitch led the band at ASU? You didn't know that. We found that out last week. Oh, yeah.
I've been walking around with an ASU marching band backpack for 3 years. But yes! it's okay.
Basically said that nobody noticed Mitch for 3 years here.
Not the kind of thing one notices.
Who's
looking at a person's backpack when they walk in, right?
Plus, for the last year, I was up at 4 a.m. and out of here at 10:30.
Oh, you got to love this shift much better.
I loved sleeping today, Gamble.
Yes, I know.
Got to tell you, it was great.
You're welcome. So in exchange for sleeping in, you have to come strong now with the Twitter poll question today. So
I will do my best.
What do you have for us in exchange for sleeping in?
Here's what I've got today, gentlemen. Does the up and down Pac-12 play to start the year increase your expectations for ASU and their chances of winning the conference title? You have three options. Yes, it feels more winnable. No, it was just 1 week. Or the expectations are the same.
Feels a little more winnable.
I'm going to agree. Yes.
Feels a little more winnable.
Feels more winnable.
Yep. Feels a little more winnable. That was just a...
Or it was just 1 week, because it's just 1 week.
That was a mess up north, man. They went 1-5, and some of those losses were bad losses.
Yeah, okay, but who's in the Pac-12 South?
Well, all the ranked teams, the good teams.
Right.
The USC's and the UCLA's and the Utah's and the ASU's. I feel a little bit, not a lot, a little bit better about it, enough to vote for yes, I feel better about their chances. Survey says?
Survey says that yes is actually tied for second right now at 26.3%. The leader at 47.4% is no. It was just 1 week. So a lot of people hesitant to increase expectations for ASU this early.
Okay, that's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. One word is where you can find that. My first show back since being in Montana, and I will tell you that the one thing, I mean, other than the changes here at the station, I don't want to gloss over that and pretend like that didn't happen, because obviously that did happen, and that was pretty monumental. But the one sports thing that happened while I was gone that really caused my eyebrows to shoot straight up was Malcolm Butler retiring. It was, wow. That was not expected to be seen by this organization or by this team going. I mean, that must have taken you guys by big time surprise last week for sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's just no question that it did. So, you know, we worked hard. We were able to get the information out there last week that they were signing Antonio Hamilton and Rasul Douglas, two veteran players that would not have been eligible to be picked up off of waivers because they were vetted. They had enough experience where they went right to, you know, free agency. So they weren't guys that, you know, that were released and then they were claimed by another team because they were veterans. So those guys, you know, one of them will probably, you know, come off the practice squad and be eligible to play, because you could take two guys off the practice squad and flex them each week. So they added Rasul Douglas and Antonio Hamilton, which is good. Some veteran players that have experience, I think that's good. But yeah, you know, we all expected that Malcolm Butler, for, and look, to be honest with you, I mean, when they signed him, we all thought that, you know, wow, they're getting a better player than Patrick Peterson. They're getting a better player than Patrick Peterson. Well, Patrick Peterson right now, depending on how he plays, he's probably laughing about it, because the guy that the Cardinals signed to replace him didn't even make it out of training camp.
Retired. It was shocking to see it. And not, I'm not trying to rehash a conversation that you guys had last week without me about Malcolm Butler. I just kind of, because we're talking about cornerbacks and we're actually looking at Tennessee, the week one opponent here, and they made an interesting decision at cornerback over the weekend. They're going to start Christian Fulton at cornerback this weekend, which means that first-round pick and much-discussed potential Cardinal Caleb Farley will begin the season as a reserve. So in a weird, roundabout way, the guy the Cardinals could have, and some people think should have drafted in the first round, is on the bench. And the guy the Cardinals did draft in Marco Wilson becomes the guy who now suddenly plays a very prominent role for the Arizona Cardinals moving forward. There's just no denying that at this point. And I'm very curious to see how that's going to turn out for everybody.
Yeah, if you remember going back to the draft, we had ruled out Caleb Farley as an option for the Arizona Cardinals. We ruled him out, and we said if he's on the board when they pick, that is not a guy that they are interested in and not going to take him. He actually rated out as one of the lowest graded rookies this year on Pro Football Focus. He was one of the lowest graded rookies for the entire preseason, which tells the story of the guy is just not ready to play. I mean, his grade was 51.9. Now, whether that's cause for concern or not, I don't know. He was in on 27 coverage snaps and didn't play particularly well. He did not impress at all in the preseason. So, you know, he played against the Bucs. He had 16 defensive snaps there, and he actually, believe it or not, he got outplayed by their third-round pick, Elijah Molden, who is going to start as the slot cornerback. He was a third-round pick, and they really liked him. So they do have a cornerback that is going to get a lot of playing time from the get-go and likely start as the slot cornerback. But it's not Caleb Farley, it's Elijah Molden.
If I remember right, going into the draft prep, it was always thought that Caleb Farley was going to be kind of a long-term project anyway, that you were going to draft him and he wasn't going to be ready to go right away because he had the back surgeries, because there were injury concerns, and you were going to kind of have to nurse him along a little bit. Here's Cliff Kingsbury from the Wolf and Luke show today on his projection of the cornerback room.
We're going to get through the week and see how it lines up for us. You mentioned it, but we have three guys we feel like can all start regardless of who's out there. So we'll kind of see where our matchups lie and how we're going to attack this game plan and take it from there.
And it's not to say that Marco Wilson is going to be a better cornerback when it's all said and done over Caleb Farley. He's just in a better situation to contribute right away. I look, you know me. You know how nervous I was about that cornerback room before. Man, I can't even begin to tell you how nervous I am about that cornerback room now that Malcolm Butler's not in it. I mean, I'm going to be on edge about
that. I brought that up every day
that.
Last week.
Did you?
Yeah, how nervous you were.
Oh, my God. I saw that story. I'm like, wait, what? Malcolm Butler, all that room. I'm just thinking about room and what they're going to do and how they're going to have to stop every wide receivers every single week. Scares me to death, Gambo. Scares me to death.
Listen, there's two ways to look at it. I know Mike Jarecki brought this up on his podcast last week, and he's exactly right. Isaiah Simmons is going to play some cornerback, because he can cover tight ends and he can cover running backs. He's going to play some corner. So you have to factor in that Isaiah Simmons is a guy that's part of their cornerback routine. He's going to get some time at cornerback. Now, you know, your main three guys, I'm very excited about Byron Murphy. I think he's very capable of being a number one guy. Robert Alford was a very good pro, but he hasn't played in 2 years. So, you know, we don't know what to expect
from him.
Marco Wilson, they're going to pick on rookies. He's looked great, but you know, you pick on rookies. You go after them. He's got to prove that he's good enough. Now, his athleticism and the speed has been elite.
Yeah.
And then you throw Isaiah Simmons in there, who's going to play a little bit, and you add these new players that they just added, and you kind of feel like, okay, there's decent depth. It's just not as strong as you would like.
Yeah, I think to me, it just increases the pressure on the guys up front to get pressure on the quarterback. I mean, that's the only way this is going to work is if J.J. Watt, Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, Devon Kennard, if they're bringing it on a routine basis to make the quarterback uncomfortable, because the quarterback is comfortable. I think Byron Murphy's a good player, man. I think there are going to be options down the field for teams when they're playing the Cardinals with that cornerback room the way it is. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we are less than a week away from the start of the Cardinals 2021 regular season. And as we get closer and closer to the season opener, the predictions are all over the place. And we'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo show.